This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, at the weekend, there were protests around the country, in Dublin in particular, but elsewhere as well. And everywhere there is a growing sense of fear, of crisis at the rise in the cost of living, the inflationary pressures in the economy. We are, of course, still living with the consequences of COVID, of Brexit, and the latest international influence on our economy is, of course, the war in Ukraine and the Russian aggression there. There's no sign of that ending. And when you put the three things together, you come up with serious consequences for people who are trying to live their lives. And we're joined now to discuss the Irish situation and indeed the situation in the European Union by one of our leading economists, Jim Power. Jim, has the world ever had, in economic contexts, three crises of this nature so soon after each other? Indeed, in a way, COVID and Brexit happening almost at the same time, and this war, of course, now adding to the world's woes in all kinds of ways.
Well, I think, Eamon, for those of a certain age, there are some resonances at the moment with what happened in the 1970s, in 73 and 79, due to wars in oil-producing countries. We had two significant oil price shocks, and that gave rise to a phenomenon called stagflation, which describes slowing growth and rising inflation. And back then, the rising inflation was a direct result of the oil price shock, which damaged economic activity because the world was even more dependent back then on imported oil than it is today. And central banks reacted to that with significant increases in interest rates. And we had Paul Volcker, one of the more famous Federal Reserve chairmen in the United States, increasing interest rates in the early 80s to try and kill inflation for once and for all, and caused a major recession in the States, but did deliver a significant taming of inflation at that stage eventually. There are, as I say, resonances with that period today. We're in an environment where global growth is undoubtedly under pressure because of COVID, because of the Ukraine war, and the impact that's had on inflation particularly. Central banks are now increasing interest rates quite aggressively. Last week, we saw the US Federal Reserve increase interest rates by 0.75%, which was the single largest US interest rate increase in over 30 years. The Bank of England increased rates by 0.25%. The Swiss Central Bank increased rates by 0.5%. So interest rates everywhere are on the way up. As I say, global economic growth is definitely very, very challenged at the moment. And unfortunately for central bankers, the imperative at this juncture is certainly to try and bring inflation, and more importantly, to try and bring inflationary expectations back under control. And the Federal Reserve's move last week, I think, made it very clear that the view the US Central Bank is now taking is that engineering a recession is the only way to bring about a significant decline in US inflation. A high price to pay, but I think the view would be that if they allow inflation to continue to build in the system and inflationary expectations to continue to build in the system, that that would cause more severe economic problems in the medium to long term. So there is a very clear central bank strategy at the moment in a number of countries. That is increase interest rates, regardless of the economic consequences, to try and arrest the ongoing spiral in inflationary costs. In Europe, the interest rate situation to date has been different in the sense that we haven't seen the European Central Bank increase interest rates yet. And I think the delay to date has been that Eurozone growth is certainly well behind that in the United States. Unemployment is considerably higher than in the United States. And certainly there are not indications of excess demand in Europe, unlike in the United States. So the Federal Reserve has been quite reticent up to now about increasing interest rates, but that's about to change. I think the European Central Bank will increase rates by 0.25% in July and probably 0.5% in September. And indeed, over the next 12 months, I wouldn't be surprised to see ECB interest rates going from 0 at the moment to 2%, as I say, within 12 months. So it's a strange set of circumstances. And as you say, Ukraine is a crisis coming on top of another crisis, which is COVID. But I also think there is still this ongoing legacy of what happened back in 2007, 2008, yep, which is still very real out there. So it's a very, very difficult situation globally. There's no doubt about that.
Now, in Britain, the Bank of England governor last week, when announcing that quarter point rise in the interest rate, predicted that inflation in the UK was heading for 11%. Here, my understanding is we should have inflation, or could have inflation, around 8%. Are those figures accurate?
Yeah, I mean, the Irish inflation rate in May was running at 7.8%. And back in March, I was predicting at that stage that Irish headline inflation would move above 10%. Bodies like the ESRI and the central bank disagree. They think inflation will peak out at around 8%. I'm not so sure. I think we could well see inflation with in double digits over the coming months. Of course, a lot depends on, you know, what's happening globally, because the global inflation problem is due to supply side problems rather than excessive demand in the main. There's some, yeah, excessive demand in the States, but it's mainly a supply side problem. And what I mean by that is that the cost of goods has increased dramatically. And particularly, you know, on the food side, global wheat prices at the moment, which is a key ingredient in food, all food, up 56%, palm oil up 48%, cheese up almost 42%, coffee up 52%.
Fertilizer is one of that, isn't it? It's one of those issues for farmers.
It certainly is, because, there's a couple of things happening here. One is that Ukraine, Russia, that part of the world is obviously, you know, the breadbasket of Europe, if indeed not of the world. Significant wheat producer, significant producer of sunflower oil. Both of those have been significantly disrupted by the war in Ukraine, and both prices and supply have been significantly damaged. So that's one issue. There's a serious shock to the supply of a number of important food products. But the second issue then is what's happening on the input side. And fertilizer obviously is one of the most important inputs along with labor and energy in food production. And in the year to April, fertilizer prices in Ireland up by 177.8%. You know, that is dramatic stuff, and it's being reflected around the world. A few reasons for that. There was already upward pressure as a result of the supply disruptions and production disruptions of fertilizer caused by COVID, but also potash is a significant ingredient in fertilizer, which is a key product in Ukraine, Russia, Belarus, and so on. So the cost of fertilizer increasing dramatically, that obviously feeds in significantly to the cost of food production. So that is definitely feeding. And indeed, in the last couple of weeks, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, you know, it predicted that this year global food imports would increase by 51 billion to hit $1.8 trillion. Okay, but of that 51 billion increase in the value or the import bill for food, 49 billion is due to higher prices.
Yes.
So it's not due to the fact that more food is being imported. It's the cost of what they're importing is rising. Transport costs are important here, but also, as you said, fertilizer as an input is incredibly important. And one of the risks here is that there is a price elasticity of demand for fertilizer. So in other words, as the price rises, the demand for fertilizer will reduce. And there are already indications in some of the rice producing countries, which are typically poor countries.
Yes.
And over 50% of humankind lives on rice. So with the price of fertilizer increasing so dramatically, rice producing countries apparently are cutting back on the use of fertilizer. That should feed directly into a poor rice crop over the coming 12 months. So that's just going to exacerbate the shortage of food, the price of food. And that's why I think for reasons of food more than anything else, you know, the inflation rate in this country could easily hit and top 10% over the coming months, because I just don't see any of those forces driving food prices improving anytime soon. Obviously, a lot depends on what happens in Ukraine, but based on what we see at the moment, that situation doesn't look like resolving itself anytime soon. So here in Ireland, in the year to May, food price inflation was running at 4.5%. That seems pretty tame relative to the headline rate of 7.8%, which is primarily driven by various energy costs. But within that food, that 4.5% is the highest rate of food price inflation we've seen in at least a couple of decades. Bread is up 8.8%, flour is up 12.1%, meat is up 7.5%. And based on what we understand about global forces, and particularly input costs like energy and fertilizer and indeed labor costs, it is hard to reach any other conclusion other than that food price inflation is really going to become a thing in this country and elsewhere over the coming months. And indeed, the United Nations has warned that around 800 million people globally could be seriously vulnerable. Yes. To serious food shocks over the next 12 months.
Yes, and that's something I wanted to ask you about when you mentioned rice and the mortal threat that this poses to people in the third world, in countries where there is suffering of all kinds, and one of the basic foods is rice, and the needs of that, and to measure that, as it were, to weigh it against our own suffering in the first world.
Yes, I mean, the UN analysis makes it very clear that more vulnerable countries are paying significantly more for their food imports, but they're actually receiving less food. And typically those countries have growing populations, so the demand for the volume of food being consumed should be increasing, but it's actually declining because of the price. So that does spell, you know, huge, huge problems for those vulnerable countries. And, you know, in many senses, what we are experiencing in Europe, the United Kingdom, Ireland is, it's pretty tame compared to real problems like that. But, you know, nevertheless, as we're seeing, and we saw at the weekend, with the cost of living protests happening around the country, you know, clearly, a lot of people are feeling a serious squeeze in this country at the moment. But relative to those vulnerable countries, you know, what we're experiencing is pretty tame stuff.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, there were protests around the country at the weekend. Later this week in Britain, there's a rail strike on 3 days and more predicted to come. I want to ask you what governments can do in the face of this kind of tornado, really, of bad news that seems to be way beyond the control of any individual nation, or indeed, if you look at the EU, the UK, or the US, of any continent or cluster of countries.
Yeah, it's interesting the way governments are being blamed for this crisis at the moment. And, you know, a lot of the narrative coming out of the protests here in Ireland at the weekend was that this is a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael government caused problem. But if you look around the world, in the United States, where we currently have under Biden, by US standards, a pretty left-wing government, it has high inflation. In the United Kingdom, we have, by any standards, a pretty right-wing government. The UK has very high inflation. Germany has a centrist government veering slightly to the left. It has high inflation. Italy has a combination of everything in its political system. It has high inflation. So I guess the conclusion you would draw from that is that this inflation problem is not because of, it's not caused by governments. Okay. So blaming governments for what's happening, I think is missing the point. But I guess the other point is, you know, what can, so, okay, before I go on to what governments can actually do about it. So what's causing all of this? Well, it is the disruption caused by what we've lived through over the last 2.5 years as a result of COVID and the impact that has had on supply chains and the production of lots of stuff. And then, of course, that has been utterly exacerbated by the savage Russian invasion of Ukraine and the impact that's had on food prices, energy prices, industrial metals, and so on. So A lot of this stuff is out of the control of governments. So what can governments do about it? I mean, what can the Irish government do? Micheál Martin, I saw him quote at the weekend as saying that the Irish government cannot chase inflation. So in other words, the Irish government cannot turn around and spend a load of money every time we get the latest spike in the price of something. That would be incredibly expensive. And I'm not sure it's a sensible strategy. I think one thing government can certainly do is to look at, number one, the taxation of energy, for example, because despite the reduction we saw in excise duties in energy, the government is still going to collect more in excise duties this year on fuel than before the cuts in that taxation, and that's because the price has escalated so much. So they could look at significantly reducing the tax take on energy and fuel generally.
That was one of the calls at the weekend. Petrol retailers were calling for a VAT reduction on fuel to ease the cost. I think the VAT rate is 23%, and they want it reduced to 10%.
Yeah, absolutely. And likewise with the excise part of it, you can certainly, you could make a meaningful impact there by doing those things. But I think a bigger problem actually is going to be food, because I think from a political perspective, rising energy costs is a significant problem. Okay, there's no doubt about that. But and I guess it's happening at a reasonably good time of the year, you know, when we're into the summer, when the demand for energy is less strong anyway, particularly for heating houses and so on. And I would note also that, and this has been statistically proven in the United States, but I would notice anecdotally here in Ireland that the escalation in the cost of motor fuel has certainly done nothing to dampen traffic. So people are still out there driving. I think a much, much bigger issue would be, if I'm correct, and if food price inflation really starts to become a significant issue, that's when it becomes really, really politically difficult to handle. There is no VAT on food, so you can't turn around and reduce the VAT. So there really is only one response to that, and that is a direct financial subvention to people. And I think that would be, number one, incredibly expensive if it was to be done universally. So I think what the government has got to do, if it's going to lend support, it has got to do so to people who are on social welfare, who are vulnerable.
Yes.
I think that is the only choice. You can't just turn around and, you know, do something in a universal sense to try and help everybody. You know, some of us, we just have to soak it up.
Yeah.
And one of the things that has struck me in the last couple of years is how more and more calls are coming on government to solve every problem.
Yes.
And maybe I'm a dinosaur here, but, you know, when I was growing up, and particularly during the 70s with the two oil price shocks, you know, the government wasn't expected to step in and bail out everybody. But because of the bailout of the banking system back in 2011-13, that period, because of the significant government intervention in the face of COVID over the last 2.5 years, there is now just a general expectation and acceptance that every time you have a problem, government steps in and solves that problem for you. I don't think that is a realistic expectation, because it would be an incredibly expensive thing to do. And I also think it's just dangerous building up this much dependence on state intervention in the system.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of key questions about people with real muscle. Joe Biden, President of the United States of America, he has been scathing about the Saudis, and in particular about the Crown Prince, who was deemed to be responsible for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, a journalist from the Washington Post, who was a moderate critic of the Saudi regime. Biden is going to visit the Saudis now. He's going to ask them to turn the taps on their oil production to help out the West. That's one sign, we could argue, of a change, maybe a bit humiliating, but necessary. The other thing I want to ask you about is the prospect of a long war in the Ukraine, with Russia and Ukraine apparently digging in for the long haul. These two things. One, if Biden were to succeed in persuading the Saudis to increase the oil supply, can they do that significantly enough and in volume enough to in any way make a dent in the problem?
I think there's a huge level of hypocrisy involved in Biden doing what he has to do. But I guess if you look in the sporting world at the new golf tour, if you look at what's happening with football clubs in England, and you think about Man City and Newcastle, for example, there's a huge level of hypocrisy here. But Biden obviously regards reaching out to the Saudis and going out there with the begging bowl as being the lesser of two evils.
Yep.
And if the Saudis increase the oil supply, turn on the taps a bit more, presumably other countries in the region would respond accordingly. I think they have the capacity to do that. If you combine that increased supply with the reduced demand for fuel, that will inevitably happen if central bank policy causes a recession in the United States and elsewhere. So a combination of those factors could bring oil prices back down over the coming months. I guess it is clutching at straws in a sense that desperate times require desperate measures. And I think that's what Biden going out to the Saudis does represent as it doesn't look very, a lot of people would have a lot of problems with that. But I guess, as I say, it is the lesser of two evils at this juncture. I think there's another element of this. And it ties into the second question you asked me, if this turns out to be a prolonged war, clearly it is going to have a prolonged impact on food prices and food supply around the world, particularly in areas like wheat and in fertilizer and in sunflower oil and so on. So that whole food issue is going to remain a big issue. And in terms of energy, likewise, you're unlikely to see an increase in the supply of, or at least the supply of gas and oil out of Russia will remain extremely weak and vulnerable. So I think what we've got to think about in the rest of the world is, and particularly here in Ireland and indeed Europe, we have got to reduce our dependence on imported fossil fuels. We've just got to push forward this alternative energy agenda. So solar, wind, wave energy, these energies have got to be developed. I'm not saying they are the total solution, but they would be part of a portfolio of a solution. I think ultimately the most sensible thing to do would be to go the nuclear option. It makes a lot more sense, I think, than any other alternative energy proposal at the moment. But of course, in this country, the notion of nuclear power is just not contemplated at all. But the one thing this Russian war should really teach us is that we do need to reduce our dangerous dependence on energy imports from volatile countries. And it's not just Russia, it's a lot of the other oil producing countries around the world likewise. But of course, the spirit of NIMBYism in this country just prevents the development of wind and solar energy. But also, from a government perspective, they pay lip service to offshore wind energy, for example. But government is lending no support whatsoever to that industry at the moment in a real sense. And I've spoken to operators who are trying to develop offshore wind as a partial solution to the energy crisis, and they all tell me that they're getting no support whatsoever from government, that lip service is being paid but nothing more. So
but that,
I,
that's
I really,
a long term. Yeah, that's a long term project, Jim. Just let me ask you a final question about how bad this could get. And I mean, let me put it this way. The European Union, the United Kingdom, and the US, they won't all be singing from the same hymn sheet, will they?
No. And I mean, the geopolitics of everything that's happening at the moment is obviously also complicating this because, you know, what we've seen over the last 5 or 6 years and more has been this growth in economic nationalism, the growth in more extreme politics. And I suppose Trump really pushed that agenda. The chances are that the Republicans will regain both houses in November. That will set Trump up for a run at the White House again in 2024. And even if it's not Trump, some Trump-like character. So I think this division between the United States, Europe, and indeed, you know, the United Kingdom, given the nonsense that's going on with Brexit at the moment, the politics of all of this extremely difficult as well. And the French elections at the weekend have seriously undermined the rest of Macron's presidency, the term which is just beginning. That term now is going to be seriously damaged by the election results at the weekend. And the consensus view this morning is that this sets the extreme right in France up for a very strong showing in 2027. I know a lot can happen, you know, over that period of time.
Yes.
But the whole global geopolitical thing at the moment is extremely fragmented, countries going in different directions. And I think Europe's big problem now is that there is no leadership whatsoever because Scholz in Germany is not providing leadership. Macron has now been seriously undermined.
Yes.
So you'd struggle to name any other European leader at the moment. So European political leadership is really, really an issue at this stage. So if you do not have strong leadership, cooperation between the major Western powers, well, then, you know, all of these problems are just going to rumble on and on, unfortunately.
Could it be that we've reached the end of an economic era?
I mean,
progressive, yeah. Stable, predictable. Could that be when you look across the globe, no longer a given?
I think the legacy of 2007-2008 has fundamentally changed the global political landscape. It definitely helped give rise to the rise of extreme politics. It definitely helped give rise to the growth of nationalism and this anti-globalization or de-globalization agenda, whatever you want to call it. And the Ukraine war, COVID first, and now the Ukraine war has exacerbated all of those pressures. So I definitely think that the whole model of globalization that we have grown up with for, you know, 40, 50 years, well, certainly since the late 1950s, is now under serious threat. And deep globalization, I think, is going to be a massive theme. And that's why, you know, there's going to be, I think the whole model of capitalism and globalization is fundamentally changing at the moment. I think there will be much more sort of individualism from countries or nationalism, if you want to call it that. I think countries and businesses will be much more reluctant to invest in certain countries that they would deem to be politically unstable or dangerous, or perhaps they don't have the sort of ethical standards that would be acceptable. And so that whole ESG agenda feeds into this. So, yeah, I mean, I think the model of capitalism has been fundamentally damaged by what's happened in the last 15 years. And always when one model ends, there tends to be a vacuum created for a while, and vacuums are always dangerous. So I think...
And they're always filled.
They are indeed. Yes, indeed. So, they're always filled by dangerous things. So, and I'd be reasonably sanguine about this if I believed we had strong global political leadership at the moment, but we don't. As I tried to describe earlier, I think there's a serious global political leadership vacuum at the moment. And that, of course, allows extreme authoritarian leaders like Xi Jinping in China, Putin in Russia,
Viktor Orban in Hungary.
Erdogan in Turkey, Bolsonaro in Brazil, Modi in India. So, we see it all over the place. And the West, or the developed world, if you want to call it that, never had a greater need to be more united. Yes. And never, I think, has it been more disunited than we see at the moment. And as I say, the lack of political leadership, I think, is a huge, huge fundamental problem. So I'd be very worried about global geopolitics into the future.
Okay, Jim, we're really grateful to you for reminding us how much we like our strongmen. Thank you very much indeed, Jim. That's Jim Power, one of our leading economists and one of our most interesting intellectuals. We're grateful to Jim, as always. To all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.